Guy segment. And we are going to do that right now by welcoming in our very next guest, Guy Cipriano, editor of Golf Course Industry Magazine. A pleasure as always, my friend. How are you today?
Yeah, it's great to be honest with you, Bull. And we kind of go way back to our New York Penn League days. I think I met you in like 2003 when you were announcing for the Jamestown Jammers and I was covering the Williamsport Crosscutter. So it's great to hear your voice and be on your show.
Ironically enough, you and I met at a converted penitentiary that was like a three-level bar, wasn't it? I think that's what it was.
I believe it was called the Cell Block in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. And yep, it was a former prison that is a bar. And I haven't been back to Williamsport for a few years. I need to get back there, but I believe it's still in existence because I think one day, maybe a few months ago, I just Googled it to see if that place is still in existence, and it's still there. So yeah, crazy. So who knows? You know, you live near a prison, and who knows what it might become down the road.
That's right. 20 years later, you'll still keep up and maintain some sort of relationship with that person. Good stuff, man. Well, hey, before we go any further, I mentioned you're the editor of Golf Course Industry Magazine. Tell us about this publication, which runs its operation right here out of Cleveland.
Yeah, your listeners are probably thinking, what the heck is a golf publication doing in Cleveland, Ohio? But it's really neat what we do. So, we're called Golf Course Industry Magazine. We're what you would call a business-to-business publication. So you couldn't go to, like, the bookstore or the newsstand or the grocery store and buy a golf course industry like you could a golf magazine or Golf Digest. You can go online, and anybody can get it for free. But the people getting the print copies are the people that mainly maintain and build golf courses. So we go to golf course superintendents, we go to golf course architects, we go to golf course builders, we go to researchers that study turf grass, we go to golf course owners, general managers, and we go all over the country. And yeah, a magazine like that happens to be based in Northeast Ohio. Our parent company, GIE Media, started here and is still operated out of here. So yeah, we go all over the country, but we're in Cleveland covering the golf business, and Cleveland isn't exactly a place where you can experience golf year-round, although I must say it's been a mild winter, which has been great for people that like golf, that like to go out and maybe play a quick nine or hit some balls. I mean, heck, last Monday I was out hitting golf balls at lunch. So, yeah, here we are in Valley View, Ohio, running a golf publication that goes all over the country to people that make golf courses the tremendous products that they are.
Golf and travel a lot of times go hand in hand. They will definitely do that this weekend at the IAC Center for the Golf and Travel Show. You mentioned that you'll kind of be going as a regular customer, right? So if our listeners are out there going to the Golf and Travel Show this weekend, what kinds of aspects of the show do you think they should be aware of?
That's a good question. I haven't been to it for 5 years, Bull. Most of the shows I go to are trade shows where they're selling the mowers that maintain golf courses and the other supplies such as fertilizer and chemicals and data platforms and irrigation systems. So for me, this is exciting to go to the IX Center this weekend, just kind of as a golf consumer. There's kind of me that's in the work mode, that's dealing with this side of the industry that maybe a lot of people don't know about. And then there's the consumer that loves to play the game. And I haven't been to this, I think, for 5 years. I think my first year living in Northeast Ohio, 2013, 14, I did go, and I'm excited. I would recommend that anyone that goes to it, it'll get you in the golf mood, right? You'll be inside, you'll be see people selling golf clubs, trying to sell golf trips. You'll have indoor hitting stations. You'll have some personalities. I think they have some guest speakers. It's just going to get you in the golf mood. And here's the crazy thing: it's only February, and who knows? You know, who knows? We could be in full blown golf mode here in 4 weeks, or it could take 2.5 months. But this is something to get people excited about and just go in there and, you know, talk to people. You know, golfers all have this passion for the sport, and you think about, it's crazy what people go through to play golf. I mean, people wake up at 6 a.m. and try to squeeze rounds in before 11 a.m. when it's 39 degrees out, just to be at home with their families afterwards. You know, people try to slip a quick nine in after work. You know, people make a lot of sacrifices to play this game because they love it, and it's always fun to go to an event like that and be around other people that love golf just as much as you do. And another thing I would say is, you know, thank the companies exhibiting there. You know, a winter golf event like that isn't possible without the vendors and the people that buy booth space booth space. So make some time to talk to them, even if you're not interested in buying their product or service. They're the ones that make shows like that possible. And just have fun with it. And it's pretty cool that Cleveland does have an annual winter golf gathering like this.
Should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to going down there myself this weekend. I need to get some new gear. FootJoy's got some really cool short sleeve jackets. I'm hoping I might be able to find a couple there. So I'll be headed down there at some point this weekend as well. Again, we're speaking with Guy Cipriano, the editor at Golf Course Industry Magazine. He's our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. All right, Guy, let's get into this past weekend's action, the AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am. Nick Taylor was the winner. Not only did he win, he went wire to wire. Your thoughts on his overall performance this weekend?
I mean, it was awesome. And Nick Taylor is somebody who was one of the best amateurs in the world. In fact, in 2009, he won the Mark H. McCormick Medal for being the best amateur in the world, and that was 11 years ago. And there was a lot of hype and a lot of expectations for his career. He's a Canadian. He went to the University of Washington. He was an excellent college golfer. And, you know, here he is 11 years later getting the biggest win of his professional career. He won the Sanderson Farms Championship in 2014, so it's been 6 years between his two PGA Tour wins. And I think it just goes to show how tough it is to win on the PGA Tour, that somebody could be that good of an amateur player and really take 11 years to get that big breakthrough win. I mean, the Sanderson's Farm Championship is a nice event down in Mississippi, but it's not the same thing as winning it at Pebble Beach. And the field at Pebble Beach is always, I'd say it's about an average field in the PGA Tour. It's tough to get a whole bunch of, you know, highly ranked players in the world because the date's tough, and honestly not a lot of golf stars want to commit to 4 days playing alongside an amateur. So the field of the Pebble Beach Pro-Am probably doesn't match the prestige of the course where the tournament ends. I mean, Pebble Beach is obviously one of the best golf courses in the world, and they also use Monterey Peninsula Country Club, which is also awesome, and Spyglass Hill, but all the pros in it that make the cut are guaranteed at least two rounds at Pebble Beach. So for somebody to beat a decent field at Pebble Beach, who hasn't won for 6 years and, you know, really is 31 years old and was still looking for that breakthrough win, that's a big deal for him. And he won wire to wire. I mean, think about that. You're playing alongside an amateur all week. In his case, it was Jerry Tardy, the editor-in-chief of Golf Digest. Well, how lucky is Jerry to get to play in the Pebble Beach Pro-Am? I wish Golf Course Industry had a spot in that, and I'm sure you wish your radio station did too, Bull. But think about that. You're playing alongside an amateur for 4 days. You have a pretty good field, and you win wire-to-wire on a tournament that's contested on three different golf courses. That's pretty impressive, and what's impressive is, you know, who he was paired with in the final round. I mean, he was paired with Phil Mickelson, who's obviously a crowd favorite wherever he goes, and Nick Taylor took on Phil head-to-head and beat him, so that's got to be a huge confidence for him.
Not only that, so you mentioned that, of course, that final round, he's paired up with Phil Mickelson, and because it's a pro-am, you're next to an amateur, which in most cases there's a certain degree of popularity associated with that. I know Larry Fitzgerald was involved here as well. So not only are you golfing on the final day paired up with Phil Mickelson, well, Mickelson's partner was Steve Young, so there's a lot of star power going on here as well. But I think that was also an interesting element to his final round, the fact that people are cheering for Phil Mickelson, right? They don't know a whole lot about Nick Taylor, but they all know the name Phil Mickelson. They're pulling for him. I kind of felt like that made it even tougher for him. He had to be that much mentally tougher down the stretch in order to get over that hump.
And look, I'm biased, Bull. I mean, golf's my number one passion. It's what I made my career of. Fortunately, you know, I was able to work my way up through the media ranks and get a job like I have now. So I'm a little bit biased towards this, but I would say that's what makes Sundays on the PGA Tour special, is you have so many possibilities. And I was actually thinking about this as I was hiking with my girlfriend last Sunday morning in the Cuyahoga Valley National Park. I kind of had the golf tournament at the end of the Pebble Beach Pro-Am on my mind, and that was one thing I was thinking about, is just how many possibilities there are on a PGA Tour Sunday. And when that started last weekend, I mean, yeah, Nick Taylor was leading entering the final round, but Phil Mickelson was right behind him, and right behind Phil Mickelson was Jason Day, who was a number one player in the world at one point. And there were also a lot of other players that had a chance to win, and that kind of happens every Sunday on the PGA Tour, and that's what makes it great. And sometimes the star and the fan favorite, Phil Mickelson, wins, and then sometimes somebody like Nick Taylor has a life-changing moment and pulls it out. So, and honestly, it wasn't even that tightly packed of a leaderboard compared to some other tournaments, but you still had, you know, really a half dozen possibilities entering the final round of just that one tournament.
Well, your thoughts on that ninth hole, and here's why I ask, because I really felt like that's where things changed between Mickelson and Nick Taylor, because Nick Taylor, of course, got a little bit of a fortuitous bounce on his approach shot, but Phil Mickelson was 205 yards away in his approach shot. He decided to go with a 7-iron, and I was a little surprised to see that. Of course, he came up short, and I really kind of felt like that ninth hole is where things changed because Nick Taylor picked up a couple of strokes on him there.
Yeah, and the weather was starting to change at that point to Bull. I mean, that's one of the things that made that final round fun to watch. It was truly never over because the wind was starting to blow harder during the last 2 hours of the tournament. I think they had gusts, you know, get close to 30 miles an hour, and you saw players really indecisive on club selections, and you saw shots like the one that you alluded to for Phil Mickelson come up short when somebody thought that they hit it well. And then you also had the course firming up too, the PGA Tour, the agronomy side, which is what I deal with. They kind of condition these golf courses to peak for those Sunday rounds, and if they don't get any rain and they get some wind like they did at Pebble Beach, the golf course gets firm and bouncy, and in my mind that makes it really, really fun to watch because we just talked about how many possibilities there are during the final round of a PGA Tour event. Well, when you do have the wind and the firmness of the golf course, especially one like Pebble Beach, that made more possibilities even in play, and you saw that on the ninth hole, and that's really that was kind of a turn in the tournament. But then you look what happened, you know, a few holes after that. I mean, Nick Taylor went bogey on 11, bogey on 12, and double bogey on number 14, and you're like, oh my goodness, he's in trouble. And then he comes up short on his approach shot on 15, and then all of a sudden chips in and gets that momentum back. So yeah, 9 was a big swing in that tournament, but I'd also argue, you know, 15 with him really leaking coming down the stretch and Pebble Beach playing as nasty as it's played in tournament competition for a while, and that includes the U.S. Open last year. I mean, it wasn't playing as tough for the U.S. Open last year despite the USGA setup as it was for the final round in this AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. It was certainly, there was a lot of intrigue, and you're right, it did kind of start at the ninth hole there.
You mentioned he bogeyed number 12. He certainly wasn't alone on that. Number 12 was really tough all tournament long. What do you think made that such a tough scoring hole for everybody?
I think in my mind, you know, you look at a scorecard and we're playing as amateurs, right? Like usually the number one handicap hole is a par 5 that's long or a long par 4. And when the pros are playing, if you were going to do a scorecard and handicap the hole, it's probably the number one or two handicap hole for a PGA Tour player in a tournament setup would be a long par 3 like number 12 was at Pebble Beach. And I would really say, especially in that final round, Bull, the wind made it play difficult. I think Jason Day came up like 25 yards short on his shot, just a complete missed club, and he was chipping out of the tightly mowed fairway turf to a pin that was cut just over a bunker and somehow got up and down. But yeah, that 12th hole was fun to watch, and I think if you were to poll most PGA Tour players, they would say that a long par 3 with some wind is the toughest hole they play, because if you look at it, so they're playing the par 4 that might be long for us or the par 5 that might be long for us. Well, they're still hitting into that long par 4. They're still, you know, if conditions are okay, they're hitting a short iron into that, and then a long par 5, they're getting to the green in 2 or maybe even hitting a wedge into that. So it's just a completely different game for a PGA Tour player. And I would also say with number 12, especially on Sunday, if you look where that pin was cut, it was cut near a bunker. It was very tough to get up and down if you missed it left or short. Even if you missed it right, it wasn't easy to get up and down. And I was looking at the numbers before we got on the call here, and the scoring average on that hole was 3.39 was the average. So it was 0.39 shots over par, only 15 birdies on it in the two tournament rounds contested there. 116 pars, 84 bogeys, 7 doubles, 1 other. So there were 5 times as many, almost 6 times as many bogeys on that hole during the two tournament rounds last week as opposed to birdies.
Wow. Pretty impressive. That's pretty impressive indeed. Well, it was a pro-am, right? So you're playing with an amateur, as you mentioned. We alluded to Larry Fitzgerald being there. Of course, Steve Young was playing alongside Phil Mickelson as well. What was your favorite pairing at that pro-am this past weekend?
Oh, that's a heck of a question. There were some good ones, and you know me, I'm kind of the hardcore golf guy, so I kind of follow the PGA Tour players more than the Pro-Am participants, but I would say the pairing that really fascinated me, and this is kind of an obscure one, but the PGA Tour player was Maverick McNealy, a young player who had just come out of Stanford a few years ago, who has tremendous potential, and he was paired with Scott McNealy, who is one of the richest people in the United States, and Scott McNealy also happens to be one of his fathers. Scott made a fortune in the tech industry. He spent some time with Sun Microsystems, and he's really kind of a Silicon Valley giant. So to see him play alongside his son was pretty cool, and I would say that that's one that fascinated me, and if I were there, Pebble Beach, one that I would want to follow for at least 9 holes. You also have some ones that have some serious star power. I mean, if you think about it, Jake Owen, the country music star, who is a big golf ambassador, was playing with Jordan Spieth. That's quite a pairing there, just in terms of name recognition. Of course, you had Wayne Gretzky was playing with his son-in-law, Dustin Johnson, and they're an annual pair. And then you had Patrick Cantlay, who's one of the top 10 players in the world right now. He's probably the least known of the top 10 players in the official world golf rankings, was playing with surfing star Kelly Slater. So there were a lot of good ones. Tony Romo was in the Pro-Am, and of course he's played in some PGA Tour events on sponsors exemption. So they certainly get some serious star power there. In fact, the Pro-Am star power bowl is much bigger than the golf star power in that event.
Maverick McNealy is one of the coolest names on tour as well. It's tough not to get behind a guy named Maverick, especially for guys like us who kind of grew up in the 80s watching Top Gun, right?
Yeah, and remember that name. Maverick McNealy is a promising young player, and he's going to win a PGA Tour event at some point. He's got a lot of talent, and yeah, he's got a heck of a name, and obviously he is somebody that is well versed in the business world, which is an important skill for anyone playing golf to have.
Well, I want to dive into the Genesis Open at Riviera Golf Club this weekend. In future episodes here, we will dive into some of the great tracks that you've played, because one of the perks to your job is that you get a chance to leave the great Buckeye State and play some of the finest courses across the country. So we'll dive into that later, but I want to finish by taking a look ahead here at the Genesis Open Riviera Country Club this weekend. Who do you like in the field?
Okay, so you mentioned great tracks, Bull. Of all the courses I've visited, the one I'd most like to play that I haven't had a chance to play yet is Riviera Country Club. Golf course industry isn't in the business of rating golf courses. We leave that to the consumer magazines. But Riviera is one of the most special places I've ever stepped foot on and have ever seen with my own eyes. So the golf course there is a star, and it's every bit the star that Pebble Beach is, but the difference between last week and this week is the field at the Genesis Invitational is incredible. 9 of the world's top 10 players are there. PGA Tour players love Riviera. The tournament has actually had its status elevated this year to invitational status from regular tour events, so the purse is bigger. And oh, by the way, the host of the tournament happens to be Tiger Woods, and his foundation benefits from this event. So Tiger is obviously there as the tournament host, and is also one of the people in the field that every time he tees it up now, if he's healthy, he's got a chance to win. I think he's proven that over the last 18 months. But, picking a winner in this one's really, really tough. And I think that my pick at this moment would be Adam Scott, who was in contention last year. Adam Scott hasn't played since winning the Australian PGA in mid-December. He's taken a few months off, but I don't think that rust is a big issue with him, because he's played Riviera dozens of times, and he's one of the more experienced players on the PGA Tour. I look at the fact that Adam Scott was starting to play really well at the end of last year. He was in contention at Riviera last year. He knows the course. He knows that style of architecture and the bounces, and he won in his last event. That's somebody I'm looking at to have a big week.
Great stuff. Well, we're going to mark that down and hold you to it next week. We have you on again next week.
He probably won't make the cut.
Oh, I don't know about that. He'll make the cut. We'll just go ahead and throw that out there.
My pick last week didn't make the cut. I had Brant Snedeker at Pebble Beach coming off a strong finish at Torrey Pines a few weeks ago, and Snedeker couldn't even make the cut.
I've got faith in you. If you're picking Adam Scott, I'm going straight to Vegas with that pick, my friend.
So. Oh, well, that's good to hear.
Guy, a pleasure as always, my friend. Thank you so much for the time. We look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Yep, thanks for having me, Bull.
Thank you, Guy. Again, that's Guy Cipriano joining us. Guy, the editor at Golf Course Industry Magazine. And we will have Guy on with us every single week.